You're listening to World Affairs. I'm Ray Suarez. Vaccinating a majority of people in every country on Earth is a daunting challenge, so the international community has cobbled together a radical solution. COVAX is an initiative led by the World Health Organization, along with other global health partnerships. Today, it's working with almost every country in the world.
So COVAX is an unprecedented global effort. COVAX brings together 191 economies that together account for more than 90% of the world's population.
That's Anuradha Gupta. I spoke with her over Zoom. She used to be the director of one of the largest public health programs in the world, the National Health Mission of India. Now Gupta is based in Geneva, and she's taken on an even bigger job as deputy CEO of Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance. It's one of the health organizations helping to take the lead on COVAX. The coalition supports research into COVID-19 vaccines and helps negotiate pricing.
Together, the aim is to make sure that there is rapid development of COVID-19 vaccines, manufacturing is ramped up, supplies are procured and distributed in a fair, equitable manner across countries at a very fast pace.
Now COVAX is distributing those vaccines to the many countries who've partnered with them. Whether they can pay for them or not, Gupta says about half the participating countries do pay for the vaccines they get through COVAX.
But there are another 92 countries that are fiscally challenged. Economies at this point of time are in a tailspin, and therefore COVAX would provide vaccine doses free of charge to these 92 economies.
The goal is to procure 1.8 billion doses in 2021, with the majority going to countries in need. As of this recording, in April, COVAX has already distributed more than 38 million doses. But the initiative is still struggling. Gavi recently announced the world COVID-19 vaccine supply is already incredibly tight, and the partnership needs more funding. Gavi and the U.S. State Department recently hosted a massive online fundraising event where the president of the World Bank and other global leaders urged countries to donate any excess vaccine doses to their poorer neighbors.
The concept of common future for mankind has never been more evident than it is today.
Together, we celebrated the milestone of COVAX delivering vaccines to 100 countries.
This demonstrates just how much we can achieve through global collaboration.
And the idea is that we support these countries in vaccinating roughly about 20% of their populations that are high risk and vulnerable so that there is equitable vaccination in every part of the world, and together we can bring the acute phase of the pandemic to a halt as fast as possible.
Well, most of the people listening to this program are in North America. Almost all of them are in the global north. Beyond just it being the right thing to do or a good thing to do, what's in it for those countries already getting vaccinated to make sure that others that have not had access to the vaccine yet get it quickly?
We are in a pandemic situation, and a pandemic means that there is no country which is immune to the effects of this terrible disease that we are seeing. No one is safe anywhere, you know, if the disease continues to persist in any part of the world. And that is why it is extremely important that we tackle this disease in every country and we make sure that high-risk populations are vaccinated, transmission is reduced as quickly as possible so that the virus is not able to travel from one part of the world to another part. We have seen during the last 1 year how virus does not respect borders. So a disease that originated in one part of the world quickly spread to other parts of the world in no time. And we have now seen that variants are also traveling at lightning speed across the world. So it is extremely important, if we don't want this pandemic to be prolonged, that we vaccinate populations everywhere on the globe.
Well, yet we saw quickly after the development of the first vaccine, countries like the US and the UK take steps to ensure their own people got the shots early, got them in a widespread way, leaving either implicitly or explicitly the rest of the world to wait. Now, is there some sort of structural problem with that? That the organizations that make up COVAX, have they been able to explain to the rest of the world why that's not necessarily a good idea to proceed that way?
You can look at the situation in two ways. The glass as half empty or the glass as half full. I am reminded of H1N1 situation in 2009. You know, when we saw that poor countries could not access vaccine doses at all. H1N1 had no global mechanism which could ensure that countries that did not have the purchasing ability could get the benefit of the vaccine to protect them against that pandemic. Now with the COVID-19, COVAX is trying to make sure that the whole imperative of rapid, fair, equitable access to COVID-19 vaccines is something that is embraced as a guiding principle. And as I said, more than 190 countries coming together to make that commitment is a huge, huge step forward compared to H1N1 situation that we saw in 2009. Another important thing that we have seen is that countries have also come forward to put on the table financing to procure doses for those countries that are fiscally challenged. And we have already mobilized $6.3 billion dollars at a time when even advanced economies are seeing their economies take a huge hit. Another thing that I would want to really highlight is that COVAX has already supplied to 100 countries COVID-19 vaccine doses within a matter of weeks. Nobody could have imagined a year ago that COVID-19 vaccines could be rolled out in poor economies of the world in almost in parallel with rich countries. And they have been able to start vaccination efforts in their countries, beginning with the health workforce that is at the highest risk of infections. And we are very, very confident that in the next few months, every country would be able to access COVID-19 vaccines. And the second half of this year would see a major ramp up in all countries as manufacturing begins to ramp up further.
The United States was late to arrive at the COVAX party. Did it slow up the work of COVAX to not have the United States at the beginning? Or is it helping now that the Biden administration has brought the United States into COVAX as of January?
It has been extremely helpful to COVAX to have the leadership of the United States of America. We already see that the U.S. has made a very big commitment to COVAX with an announcement of $4 billion, which is the highest so far. The U.S. has also shown exemplary leadership in agreeing to host the summit.
We're seeing an interesting dynamic playing out. I don't think the world's ever been here before, with China India, Russia, using vaccine supply to gain influence, to improve bilateral relations with neighboring countries. What do you think when you look at these moves? Gavi is all about getting more vaccine to more people around the world. Is injecting this note of nationalism a problem? Or look, it doesn't matter as long as we get people vaccinated.
So here we are talking about an international effort, and that is what COVAX is all about. Our fervent appeal to every country is that the pandemic is a global problem, and it requires global solution, and it requires global partnerships and collaboration. In 2021, when demand outstrips supply, it is even more important that we take orderly steps to procure and distribute those limited supplies in an even manner, because if we see uneven vaccination coverage across countries, it is going to be a challenge epidemiologically, because the virus, as I have already said, is going to remain and then spread to other parts of the world. So therefore, I think it is important that everybody supports COVAX in its ambition and desire to supply the number of doses that I just mentioned, 1.3 billion in 2021 for 92 countries, so that bilateral deals do not derail a systematic effort of fairly allocating doses across countries.
Let's talk a little bit more about what fair allocation means, what fair allocation looks like. With all the need in the world, how do you decide who to supply first? If politics, if money didn't intrude at all, and you had the amount of medicine that we currently have and the number of people that we currently have, would who's getting vaccine and where they're getting it look very different from the situation that we have today?
So I think that by fair allocation, what we are trying to suggest is that access should not depend on a country's ability to pay. And therefore, countries that have more resources should not corner a disproportionate amount of tools and solutions that are being brought forward to combat COVID-19. In every country, there are certain populations that are at the highest risk and most vulnerable. And therefore, it is important that through a fair allocation formula, we try and provide a minimum coverage to every country. For example, under COVAX, what we are aware of is that given the supply constraints, though our target is to eventually supply doses sufficient to cover 20% of a country's population, it cannot and would not happen overnight. And therefore, it is a phased approach where our intention is to supply enough doses to cover at least 3% of a country's population. And we are confident that 3% population coverage means that the frontline health workers and really elderly populations who are at the highest risk can begin to be inoculated against COVID-19. And as manufacturing ramps up, then clearly countries are going to get more and more doses. And by the year end, they should be able to achieve 20% of their population coverage. And what this really means, Ray, is that by protecting the most vulnerable and high-risk populations, we make sure that cases of severe disease, hospitalization, and deaths are brought down. Health systems, particularly in poor countries, are not overwhelmed, and the capacities are not undermined. One thing that I would want to highlight also is that as we talk about COVID-19 cases and related deaths, we also need to be mindful of the collateral damage of COVID-19. In a lot of countries, we are seeing that COVID-19 has led to widespread disruption of essential health services, and therefore morbidity and mortality on account of lack of health services can take a very heavy toll. So by really ensuring a minimum vaccination coverage in every country, we also make sure that collateral damage of COVID-19 is also contained.
A lot of countries in the developing world have done a tremendous job in limiting the spread of the virus, limiting the mortality from the virus. Are you in the position now to have to tell them you've got to keep these measures in place longer because I can't get you the vaccine you need right away, but, you know, keep up the good work? It's a tough thing to remain locked down the way so many of these countries have.
So what we have seen is that public health measures, wherever taken, effectively have helped a lot to contain the number of COVID-19 infections. For example, there are countries in East Asia in particular where very good compliance on the part of people, you know, with regard to essential public health measures has made sure that the number of COVID-19 cases really has stayed very low. And I think this is a very, very good reminder of the value of discipline and how paying attention to a scientific advice of experts is so important to control the spread of a deadly disease like COVID-19.
In many cases in the past, Gavi has been a market maker. You're not pressuring companies to give their product for free. You're not asking them to become charities and develop medicines for free and give them to the world for free. You're trying to find a market mechanism so that they'll get their fair share and poorer people can get the medicines they need. With this latest experience, with the race to a vaccine joined by many different companies in many different places, did Gavi learn some lessons for the future about how markets can provide incentives to continue to innovate and create new drugs and still get medicine to people who can't afford it at market rates?
Yes. So Gavi has been around for the last 20 years, as you know. And in 20 years, our model has predicated itself on creating healthy vaccine markets through a lot of innovations. For example, we smartly aggregate demand for childhood vaccines at the global level by pooling a demand from about 70 countries that account for more than 50% of the global birth cohort. So we have volumes that we leverage. And then, of course, we create predictable demand, but also put predictable financing behind that demand and strategic roadmaps that de-risk upfront investments on the part of vaccine manufacturers, because they have clarity on how future demand is going to play out. They are confident that financing is available for Gavi to procure doses. And then with UNICEF Supply Division, we have very transparent, smooth, hassle-free procurement processes. And that is why when Gavi came into existence in 2000, we had five vaccine manufacturers, and now we have 17 vaccine manufacturers, and half of them are in emerging economies. What it has meant is better competition, diversification of production across the globe, but it also has resulted in highly affordable vaccine prices. So that is why Gavi as an alliance has been able to support countries in immunizing additional 822 million children so far, thereby averting 14 million deaths, which is a huge public health achievement. So COVAX work actually built off this comparative advantage of Gavi, you know, where we have developed niche expertise in global demand pooling, innovative finance, and vaccine delivery. Now, in this COVAX space, there are new learnings that are happening on a daily basis. First of all, in a seller's market, you know, where demand outstrips supply, what kind of incentives are possible? And also, I think one of the biggest lessons is that while we have seen phenomenal progress in terms of timelines that we have seen in development of vaccines and new technology platforms like mRNA, we still have seen difficulties in manufacturing ramp up. And that is why we have the situation that we are discussing. And I think we together would need to now pay much greater attention to understanding what are the bottlenecks that can be sorted out moving forward. Also understanding that the expectations on manufacturing ramp up have been exceptionally high. And we all of us have been really hoping that a new vaccine, which was developed in less than a year's time, would see more than 12 billion vaccine doses produced in a year's time, you know, and it's a huge, huge ambition. So I do think there are interesting insights. And I'm very confident that these lessons are going to drive efforts which are going to prepare all of us and the world much better for the next pandemic that the world may have to witness.
In the first wave of vaccinations in those countries that had available supply, we saw a great deal of refusal, hesitancy, hyper-caution about taking the vaccine. As the number of countries opens up, as it's available in more places, do you expect to see it in the global south as well?
Yes, we are seeing hesitancy in almost all countries. And that's because of many reasons. One is that the speed at which vaccines have been developed, you know, can sometimes make people somewhat fearful, you know, about whether all the rigorous processes of quality assurance, safety assurance have been undertaken. And therefore, it is extremely important that every country invests very carefully in timely, clear, transparent public communication strategies to create public confidence about the fact that there has been absolutely no short-circuiting of safety and efficacy-related processes. And that's very important. I must also say that public confidence is also related to the trust that people have in their governments. So it is important that governments rise to the occasion and actually use all credible voices, influencers, community leaders to understand the questions and doubts that people may have and respond to them following science and evidence in a very transparent manner. The second thing is that this indeed is the world's largest deployment of vaccines ever, right? So children do receive their vaccines. We have some other vaccines for adult populations, but the number of vaccine doses that are delivered every year is nothing compared to what we are talking here, right? We are talking about millions and billions of doses in a year. And of course, that itself is a massive effort. So I think we do need to make sure that the delivery of vaccines does not compromise on quality, that logistics are very carefully structured. The cold chain that is required is absolutely maintained so that efficacy of vaccines is not in any way diluted. But most importantly, pharmacovigilance and surveillance are extremely important, you know, so that people know that any adverse effects will be immediately picked up and addressed in a very transparent manner.
Does success help erode hesitancy? When people aren't getting sick, when people aren't dying, and when it's possible to open up markets again, will that encourage people that getting vaccinated is a good thing and worthwhile for them and their family members?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we have already seen that happening. For example, in Israel, you know, where vaccination was done very rapidly and a lot of data is coming out, they have seen that severe disease, hospitalization, deaths in the adult population have really gone down. And the country started to open up. People see that. And, you know, a lot of doubts that they might have had, you know, start to get addressed. And same is the case in other places. For example, in my own home country, India, you know, I remember a couple of months ago, the number of daily cases dropped to less than 10,000. And people started to become extremely smug and complacent, you know, not wearing masks, you know, not maintaining social distancing, you know, a lot of vaccine hesitancy and a lot of belief that they had vanquished the virus. And now it has come back with a vengeance. And as we speak today, I think India has more than 128,000 cases, right? And now we suddenly see that the vaccine hesitancy in the beginning, when vaccination was opened up, people were not coming forward. So there were facilities where health workers, of course, were the target population at that time, that the vaccination rates were as low as 20%, 30%, you know, and because people thought they didn't need the protection of the vaccine. And now there is such a huge demand for vaccine because people are again seeing how the virus can come back with a vengeance. There are new variants, you know, there are, of course, lockdowns. And then it is the poor who suffer the most because they lose their livelihoods, right? And then you have a hunger epidemic and all those adverse consequences. So you are absolutely right that as people start to witness the benefits of a vaccination, it would help restore confidence and actually spur people to come forward and take vaccination.
Did your time at the National Health Mission of India prepare you for your role at Gavi? When you think back to what you learned in your home country, are there people you met, cases you saw, that influence your decision to go to work for women and children around the world?
Absolutely. I think the National Health Mission absolutely was a huge undertaking, the world's largest public health program with an annual outlay of $3.5 billion at that time. And India is a large country, but is also a very complex, diverse country. And inequities in India are very, very stark. So in my time as the mission director of the mission, I really grappled with unacceptably high maternal mortality rates, child mortality rates, polio, you know, poor routine immunization, and several public health challenges. When I took over my assignment in India, India had 50% of global polio cases. And of course, you know, it was a tough calling, but we got to zero polio cases very soon. And after that, India hasn't looked back. So routine immunization vaccination rates improved. And, you know, we worked on a slew of initiatives and measures to make sure primary health care was revitalized, public health systems were strengthened. And therefore, you know, when the pandemic really started, I think we saw the whole public health infrastructure getting galvanized and activated to really fight the disease. And I think that is what gave India very good dividends. And that experience really has sharpened my understanding, Ray, of disparities, inequities, how, you know, the poor have to bear the brunt of these kind of catastrophes much more than the rest of the population. And in this COVID-19 pandemic, we see that the poor have really been hit hard. They have lost lives. They have also lost livelihoods. And in the U.S. also, you see that there are certain communities, right, which are suffered from pre-existing health inequities that have been really ravaged by this disease much more than others. And I think that this whole understanding of how inequities and disparities need very different, highly nuanced, highly contextualized approaches is something that my experience in India prepared me for and is now being used in my work at Gavi.
Anuradha Gupta, thanks for joining us on World Affairs.
Thanks a lot. It was a pleasure talking to you, Ray.
Anuradha Gupta is Deputy CEO of Gavi, one of the lead organizations that are part of the COVAX worldwide network, now providing COVID-19 vaccines around the world.
You've been listening to World Affairs, produced in partnership with KQED, with funding from TPG and First Republic Bank, and from listeners like you. If you want to support the program by becoming a member or making a donation of any size, please go to worldaffairs.org/donate. You can also download our podcast. Just search for World Affairs, that's one word, on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And we want to hear from you. What world events do you think we should be covering? You can send us a voice memo or email us at feedback@worldaffairs.org. Today's episode was produced by Jared Sport and Teresa Katsourilis. Elise Manukian is our associate producer. Joanne Jennings is our executive producer. Tatum Senderbeck and Temba Daniels provided research assistance. Our technical supervisor is Jim Bennett. Our music is mostly from Blue Dot Sessions, but we're going to close out the show with a new take on a familiar tune.
I am not throwing away my shot.
It's the work of Christopher Hahn, an ER doctor at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York.
No, I am not throwing away my shot.
I'm Philip Yun. Thank you for listening.
I'm not throwing away my shot. Who'd have thought the terror of the modern era, the terror of our character is not a pandemic? But how we don't care what the experts ask. Masks, we don't wear them. Now our vaccines arrive made by Pfizer and Moderna. Looking back on last year, we learned plenty. I guess that's why hindsight's 2020.